hour number two of this Tuesday edition of Riddle and the Reporter. Junior Riddle, Nick Kieser, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. You can watch us streaming on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook live every day, Monday through Friday, and even on Friday from 6 to 8, when we usually go on, but there is a Preds game this Friday, so that is why we are bumped to this Tuesday. We're about to get into our AFC rankings, but before I get into that, Nick is our new official reporter here at 102.5 The Game for the Nashville Predators. They have signed a brand new player, and he is also going to get into his predictions for opening night roster coming up in the 7:15 and 7:30 window. So we're going to talk a little bit of Preds after we get into these AFC rankings, 16-1. Yep. So, if you're wanting to hear some Preds talk, stick around with us. We are going to get into that because the Preds season kicks off, what is it, next week?
It'll be next week. The first game of the season's on Tuesday. The home opener's on Thursday. And it was a waiver claim. So, a signing waiver claim, same thing. But I'll give you a brief lesson coming up in the next segment. So, we'll talk Preds quickly. But, Junie, I've been interested ever since that you told me we were going to go into this. I know you love your rankings.
I do.
So, hit it, Connor. Let's go ahead and hear what your rankings are.
All right. We're going to start from the bottom. The bottom feeders that are already talking about selling four games through the season. The worst team in the AFC is the Las Vegas Raiders. All right. Everybody wants out. Devontae Adams wants out. Josh Jacobs wants out. Nobody wants to be there. So, 16 is the Raiders. 15 is the team that was winless up until this weekend. And that would be the Denver Broncos. Mm-hmm. I think offensively, Denver's looked decent at times. I think Russell Wilson hasn't looked nearly as bad as he did last year.
No.
But this defense giving up as many points as they did to the Dolphins and going down 28-7 to the Chicago Bears.
Right.
Ooh, that's bad.
He was cooking up a little bit of something on Sunday.
Yeah, no, Russ has been looking better as of late, but I just don't like this Broncos team. And I don't like the mentality of where they're going. So yeah, I got them at 15.
Chef Ramsey has a little bit more on him right now.
Number 14, I got the Jets. And purely because of their defense and how that they play and keep them in games, I feel like if Aaron Rodgers was here, this would be a top five AFC team. I think they would be at least 3-1. You could argue that they could have had a really good shot to beat the Cowboys with the way that that game was going down because it was really close up until the very end. So the Jets are at 14 just because outside of, you know, this past Sunday Night Football where Zach Wilson actually looked pretty decent. I don't expect that to continue. So the Jets are at 14. Patriots, 13. Man, how the mighty have fallen. I mean, the Patriots on defense got chopped up by the Cowboys. Their offense couldn't get anything going. I think this is Bill Belichick's last year. I really do. I think the Patriots are about to go into a completely new era of their football team, and I think it's time for Bill Belichick to wrap it up. So that's my bottom four. Okay, coming in at number 12, the team the Titans just beat, the Bengals, a team that we all thought was going to be a perennial top three team in this conference, has looked pathetic. I mean, they have looked god-awful. If the Rams would have capitalized on their opportunities on Monday Night Football last week, this team is 0-4. I mean, seriously, they have looked bad. Burrow has looked a shell of himself. I don't even think he's 50%. I mean, do you think he's 50%, Nick?
I think if he played, he's got to feel at least like 70. If he played, yes. But he's not himself. I would say he's still a shell of himself for sure.
Either so, way, the Bengals have been a huge shock to me. I didn't even think that they would be this bad with him and his injury. Okay, number 11, the team the Titans are going to be taking on this weekend, the Colts. The Colts have had some bright moments, and they've had some not-so-bright moments. I think the Colts are not that good. I think the win against Baltimore, say what you may, Lamar Jackson's just inconsistent. Sometimes he has great games. Sometimes he looks god-awful. That game, he had a god-awful game. He couldn't get anything going offensively in the second half, and I think the Colts, I think they just came in with a good game plan to contain him. And they've had a history of doing that. I believe they beat Lamar Jackson last year in a primetime game. So,
I think so.
I just don't think the Colts' defense is that good. I don't think their offensive line is that good. And that's where I have the Colts. Coming in at number 10, my beloved Steelers. Bears. I thought they were going to be so good this year. I really did. And I was trying to hold back expectations. I was like, you know what? I think this is a year before the year. I think they're going to kind of take a step forward. We're going to see a better version. No, we're not. They still suck.
So are you giving them more of a generous ranking right there, Junie?
Well, I mean, they're still 2-2. If the Steelers beat the Ravens this weekend at home, they're first in their division.
That's true.
I mean, that is by fact. They've already beaten the Browns. So it's not like they're dead in the water. They've just had two really good games where their offense won them in the Raiders. The defense won them against the Browns. And then they've had two just awful outings against the Niners and the Niners 2.0, which is now the Houston Texans. And we'll get to them a little bit later. Coming in at number 9, another disappointing team for me that I thought was going to be a breakout candidate. Everybody knows who I'm talking about right now. It's the Jacksonville Jaguars. I thought that this team was going to take the bull by the horns and they were going to put themselves at the top of the AFC this year, run away with this division. I had them as a 13-win team in my preseason rankings. That is by far off. This defense is a little bit better than what I thought, but the offense hasn't gotten in sync yet. Trevor Lawrence hasn't – I think Trevor Lawrence has been good, but everybody else around him has not been good. Calvin Ridley either makes a spectacular play or he makes a god-awful play and just cannot catch the ball.
They are definitely the kings of London, I would say. And that's really the best positive that they've had so far this season, I would say.
They're going to have to turn around. Again, this is September football, so none of this means anything. We've seen a lot of pretenders in September, so this can completely flip. But as of right now, this is where I got them. Coming in at number 8. Our beloved Tennessee Titans.
I have them above the Jags.
I have them above the Jags. I mean, I think that their body of work has been better. They have beaten better teams than the Jags have beaten. I think right now they're smack dab in the middle because we've seen two great performances and we've seen two god-awful performances. The truth lies somewhere in the middle.
Yep.
So I am putting them smack dab in the middle of the AFC right now coming in at number 8.
I think that's pretty fair.
All right. Coming in at number 7, this has been my shocker of the AFC so far. It's the Houston Texans. I mean, C.J. Stroud has looked spectacular. He's averaging 300 yards passing per game. Zero interceptions. He's looked really good. He was my number one quarterback coming out of this year's draft. I had him as number one. I was kind of maybe a bit backtracking when his S2 scores came out.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I was buying into the whole S2. But apparently that doesn't matter. No. He's been looking great. I think D'Amico Ryans has put this team into great situations. Their offensive coordinator came from San Francisco as well. And what Patrick Peterson from the Steelers said after the game, he said, this is Niners 2.0. He said they play offense and defense exactly like the Niners did. And I think that that's paying dividends. I really like what the Houston Texans have done so far. They had a clunker to open up the year in Baltimore. It's a tough opening game, first game for a rookie quarterback. But ever since then, I mean, they've looked really, really good. Coming in at number 6, the Browns. I think that they would have beat the Ravens if Deshaun Watson would have played. I said all week the Browns were going to beat the Ravens for sure. It was like almost my lock. But then I found out that Deshaun Watson wasn't going to play. I thought he was going to play. I didn't think his injury was that serious.
Sure.
So I have the Browns coming in at number 6. I think that they should be higher than 6, but because Deshaun was out and had that clunker against the Ravens, that's where they are. Coming in at number 5, I think this team had a rough start to things. You could argue that their first two games could have went one way or the other, but it didn't fall their way. But ever since then, they have been on the winning track, and that is the Chargers. I think they're starting to find their identity a bit. Khalil Mack, a guy that has been quiet since he's been a Charger. 6 sacks this past week against the Raiders.
He's been a stud.
He looked like an absolute unit this week. And if they're playing that way on defense the way they did against the Raiders, I think the Chargers can be lethal because we all know what Justin Herbert and that offense can do. Coming in at number 4, another surprise for me. And maybe not a surprise for a lot of people, but it was a surprise for me. The Baltimore Ravens.
Mm.
I mean, Lamar Jackson, this new offense, he's been throwing dimes. I cannot stress it enough. The game that they had against the Bengals, it was a clunker against the Colts in week 3. But against the Bengals and against the Browns in their two divisional games, he's looked superb. He's made tight window throws, which has been my main criticism. He's looking athletic as usual. And again, the Ravens have been one of those teams. They've been September juggernauts and December disappointments. Can they keep it going? Right now, they're September juggernauts again. And that's why they are as high as they are. Can they keep it going? That will be the big question. Well, it is yet to be seen. Coming in at number three, the team that put up 70 points just a little over a week ago, the Miami Dolphins. I know they got routed a bit against the Bills. I just think that was more of a statement game for Buffalo, trying to say, hey, this division is still ours. Respect it a little bit. Let's remember that we are still contenders in this conference because everybody's been sleeping on them. So the Dolphins come in at number three. Number two, the Chiefs. Really only because the Lions beat them in week one, and I didn't think that they had a great outing there. And also, they didn't look so hot against the Jets, and I think you could argue that they should have lost against the Jets. So coming in at number two is the Chiefs. And my number one team, ever since their bad loss against the Jets in week one, the Bills. I think the Bills have right now, they are the best top-to-bottom team offensively, defensively, coaching, everything. I think top-to-bottom here, they have been the best team in the first quarter of the season. So that is my rankings of the AFC. A lot of surprises, a lot of shockers here. There are some teams that I thought were going to be bona fide contenders, Steelers and Jets. Clearly the Jets have a reasonable excuse, the Steelers don't. And then teams like the Texans and Ravens, who I weren't so high on, they have been playing ultra well. So that is my AFC rankings. What are your thoughts on them?
Okay. Ultimately, I do agree with them. I see your case.
You have to disagree with something.
No, I do. And as soon as you ranked them, I immediately was thinking of where I would put them.
Okay.
I would beg to say that the Texans could be a little higher.
Texans could be higher.
I think that they could be. Through what we've seen so far, I think they've exceeded the expectations enough to where you can go, okay. They look a little more serious than even Jacksonville at the moment. And I'm glad that you have them where you have them. I would maybe put them a spot or two up. I'm not saying it needs to be like a top three team whatsoever because they're not a top three team.
They did lose to the Colts, though.
Exactly.
That was what was holding me back. If they were 3-1 and they beat the Colts,
I think you're all fair game.
Then I think I would have them in my top five.
Oh, no
question.
From
the way that they've been playing. I just think that they found their groove in that Jacksonville game. I think they were still looking and kind of working through their kinks week one in Baltimore. That's a tough get in week one for a rookie quarterback.
Very, very much so.
And then week two, you're at home and you kind of lay an egg against the Colts, right? You go down early, you can't catch up. Really, it was after the first quarter when Anthony Richardson went out. It was really an even game. But with Richardson in, he gave him that 14-0 advantage. And for me, that was the difference. But the Texans have looked good. Like, they have looked really, really good.
And they've done it with a non-stellar roster, arguably.
No, and that's the power of D'Amico Ryans to me.
Well, they have Robert Woods, but...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the game-breaker that he is at the age of, 101. But either way, regardless of this, the reason, and this kind of goes back to my Titans conversation, because if the AFC South was what I thought it was, I think I'd be like, my expectations for the Titans are playoffs. This should be a playoff team because they've been better than the Jags and they've been better than the Colts. Again, the Texans have been a little bit better. But because the AFC South is a little bit stronger, or I should say a lot stronger than what we thought going into the year, we thought this was going to be the worst division in football. It is clearly by far not. And so I think that some automatic wins against the Colts and Texans that we chalked up in the preseason, they're not going to be automatic wins. And something that kind of comes to mind for me, Nick, and I don't know if you thought about this, but they're wearing those Oiler jerseys against this Texans team.
It's going
to
be a really fun game.
Ooh, that could – oh.
That's going to motivate them, but I think at the same time
– because they didn't think this Texans team was going to be as good as they were.
No.
When they scheduled putting those Houston Oiler jerseys on.
You know what,
game.
Too? I think if you made this – this would be really, really interesting. I think this would be a fun wager. So the uniforms could go either way. You know what I mean? You know, the Texans could have the baby blue. The Titans could have the baby blue. Well, what if the winner gets to use the jerseys for a
season?
Put
it on the line?
You know what I mean? Yeah.
Put the Oilers, What do you say? The Oilers title, the ownership of the Oilers on the line in that game when the Titans are
not necessarily that. But
it's like taking the title belt. No, we beat you. Now we get the belt.
Okay.
And they get the Oilers jersey.
Fair enough.
I think that's ridiculous.
Fair enough.
It's still funny.
Yeah.
Either way, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, 30 minutes, we're going to be talking some Preds. Nick has been working diligently as our Preds reporter here at 102.5, 106.3 The Game. He's going to give us the latest with the teams, and we're also going to do some early predictions for their opening night roster and lines. That's coming up next here on Riddle and the Reporter, Jimmy Riddle, Nick Kieser on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Welcome back into Riddle and the Reporter, the sweet music of brass. This is Nick Kieser's theme music. I think whenever we bring you in, Nick, this has got, I could just see you in your reporter briefcase, the glasses, the fit.
Like Anchorman.
Just walking through the door.
I'm Nick Kieser.
This is Nick Kieser.
Yeah.
The reporter.
There you go.
Of the Nashville Predators.
Pete Weber is smiling somewhere hearing this.
Yes, he is. Through the electromagnetic spectrum, anytime this song is played.
Yeah.
Pete Weber might just come out of nowhere. He might come out of the bushes.
I was going to say, we might summon him. He's been waiting for that. We're not going to be playing that this year on the Preds broadcast.
That is hard to hear.
But that's okay. That is quite okay, Junie. So, but yes, the reporter. Yeah, that's what I've been dubbed, courtesy of Chase McCabe way back when, and it has stuck. And so I will be your station's reporter for 102.5 The Game this season. And training camp is beginning to wrap up. And not only have I been with the Preds training camp, I've gone to the Titans as well, but this is my domain for sure, Junie. And one thing I want to kind of walk through for our listeners is we have an addition here in Nashville in terms of understanding maybe what waivers is. And I know that diehard fans and the implant fans from other markets know exactly what waivers is. And so initially, the Predators will have to put some on waivers. They already have, because the Admirals training camp started today as well. So you have to go through waivers. It's something that comes up contractually when you've played X amount of games and you are X amount of years old. And so if that happens, you will have to go through waivers, which essentially is there's a list from 32 to 1 from the worst team to the best team. This is all according to the standings over the offseason after the playoffs ended. That's what it is currently right now. So the Predators picked up a forward. Sam Fagamo is his name.
Okay. Where is he from?
They got him from the Los Angeles Kings. And essentially, you get him for free, and you take on his entire contract, albeit it's not a very large contract whatsoever. According to Cap Friendly, our friends over there, literally, he comes in right at around $775,000, which is not too expensive for a NHL caliber type of a player or a minor leaguer. So he was in Los Angeles, but he was with their AHL team. So our Milwaukee Admirals here with the Predators. And he scored 23 goals last year. And so you're kind of taking a gamble on who this individual is. And for him, he got put on waivers yesterday at 1 p.m. Well, we met him today, and it has been a whirlwind, I'm sure, no doubt, for him. Because it's 11 a.m. L.A. time, and he gets that call that you're going to Nashville. And it's not a trade. It's not a signing. He is going to Nashville because the Kings wanted to put him in the minors. They did not get to. But this is what Sam had to say about his journey to Nashville.
What's it been like for you this last day?
Yeah, it's been super busy for me. You know, yesterday I got the call that I'm going here to Nashville, I think noon o'clock there in LA. And then I was just getting back to my apartment in LA and packing my stuff and then right to the airport. So
yeah
it's been some pretty busy hours, but I'm super happy to come here and super thankful for this opportunity.
Yeah, so for Sam, he's packing up his life, and I don't know if any of you have seen what Josh Dobbs has put on social media, but when he got picked up by the Cardinals via trade, he walked through how he packed his suitcase, and I'm sure Sam did this too. You put all of your underwear in a suitcase, a couple of t-shirts, your toiletries, a couple of important things that you want to take with you.
You get it and go.
Right. You take it, you go, you live out of a suitcase for however long it is until you're established for the season, or you think you are at least. So for Sam, he's in Nashville living out of a suitcase currently right now, but he's also in a new system that 20-odd other guys are having to learn right now. And mm-hmm. so for him, it's like your first day at school. It's you're unaware of what it's going to be like. And better yet, he knows nobody on this team.
Well, it's more like it's his first day of school. And right. everybody else, they're kinda, first day of school was like 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
So it's like, I'm not far behind. I can catch
right.
up here.
Right. So for him, he's coming into kind of a good situation where it's a new coach, it's a new general manager, and he's going to be hopping into a team that's kind of played like LA, not that, you know, far removed. Mm-hmm. And so for Andrew Brunette, he doesn't even know him as well yet. So everybody's still getting to know each other. That's going to be the theme here, I would say, for the first full season with Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette's coaching staff and himself, obviously. But what is it like to go through the first day? Here's what Sam had to say about his first day here in Nashville.
Kind of basic. It's a quick system. But for you, yeah. what was it like getting used to it?
Yeah. I think it was good. Like first couple of drills, I just tried to stand in back of the line and see how the drills works out. And I'm just going to do my best, you know, and I think it worked well.
Yeah, so like you just said, it's like being line leader at school when you're brand new and you have no idea where any of, like, you know, the gym is or the lunchroom, or you're going to visit a classroom. You have no idea where any of this is, so it's follow the leader, which is essentially what Sam did all day today.
Yeah.
So for the Predators' sake, it's going to be interesting because they announced their cuts the other day. Mm-hmm. And so there's even a roster posted in our studio of who is on the team currently, and only a couple of them played in the AHL last year. But now you add Sam to it. And I'll say his last name one more time because people may not know how to say it just looking at it. It looks kind of heinous when you just read his name. But it's Fagamo. Sam Fagamo. Samuel. He's joining the Preds, and he is pretty much vying for a spot on this team. And so I know I'm going to get into the lineups next segment of what I think it will look like on October 10th. Which is next week, by the way. But I think for him, Junie, this is an opportunity to have a fresh start. And I listened to an interview that he had with his AHL team at the end of the season before the offseason fully got started. And he was going back to Sweden for the first time after a few years. He's from Gothenburg. He wanted to go home and go visit friends and family. Good for him. But at the same time, he said he felt like he was just getting used to his new home in California.
So talk to me about this.
Okay.
What kind of player mm-hmm. is this? How does he fit into Brunette's scheme?
Sure.
And what is, like, the best case scenario that the Preds can get out of him?
I would tell you this. The best case scenario for the Predators' transaction of acquiring him this way is he gets used to the new system. He has one hell of a shot. Mm-hmm. I think he was accurate today. He beat UC Saros a couple times. He hit the post, and it rang all around the rink. It was a great shot by him. Multiple good looks, but no real chemistry yet. So you have to go through these practices. And like I said, this is the last week. There's one more practice tomorrow, then two more games. It's basically a dress rehearsal. I think we'll see him in those two games. I think we will ultimately have to see, okay, do the Predators value him enough? So this is going to be this is the biggest week in his life, I would say, right now, professionally, because he could be that bottom six forward that could score you 20 goals. Now, the Preds picked up Denis Gerianov, and he played in Dallas. Best case scenario, he does what Denis did in Dallas and scored 20 goals, but he does that at a more consistent pace. And he's known for that in his entire career. So he's a young guy, young fellow, drafted 50th overall back in 2019. So we'll see what he does, Junie.
Absolutely. And again, I think, you know, anytime you get a young player with potential that has a skill set that fits your scheme, putting more players into the funnel to see who's going to come out and give you the production, I feel like is the best case scenario for this team.
So.
And if what you're saying, again, I don't know, you know, Sam Fagamo for anything. You know, I've never seen the kid play. So hopefully he can kind of get mixed into Burnett's system and get caught up to speed. And maybe this team can kind of get the most of him and get some good use out of him, because we know as this is a transitional year for the Prez, not a lot of expectation, but the expectation is to see growth.
It is.
Hopefully we see some growth from this guy
and
see him and flourish in this system.
Before we go to break, I want to preface before we go into our lineup conversation here, Junie, because I want to get your reaction to some of it too. So I'll go line by line. And you can tell me what you think of it, or we can wait till forwards or defensemen. But I think for Sam's case, the other advantage that he can take into account is Burnett's looking for chemistry. If it works, it works.
Yep.
So take your chance.
All righty. Coming up next, Nick is going to get into his early predictions for opening night roster, and we are going to dive in to the lines. Him and I have both had conversations of who we think should be paired with who plays best with who should be playing on opening night. We're going to get into that discussion next. You're listening to Riddle and Reporter here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Make your silly underdog picks for your chance to win weekly prizes. You can play at thegamenashville.com or with the 102.5 The Game app as we approach week 6 of college football and week 5 of the NFL. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket. Welcome back in to Riddle and the Reporter, Junior Riddle, Nick Kieser, Connor Newt behind the glass. Connor, I haven't mentioned your name today after your god-awful singing performance that scared away probably majority of our listeners.
I would like to publicly apologize for that.
Thank you. Because the listeners that actually had to go through that this past Friday, I don't know if you tuned in, but we apologize as a program. It was a lost bet from MTSU and WKU. He had to sing the WKU fight song. And I think
sing is an overstatement.
I think he caused a portion of Nashville to go deaf.
Probably.
So sorry about that. We do apologize. It will never happen again. Right, Connor?
Yes, sir. I promise.
Absolutely. Either way, we are
too young to be sirs.
Yeah,
but that is all right.
You sound like Jared. That's what Jared tells me all the time. He's like, "Please don't call me sir. I'm not old enough to be a sir."
Jared needs to realize he is old enough to be a sir, especially for you. He's got when you have 15 years on somebody, you can be considered a sir.
But either way,
I digress. Enough with the joking. We are going to get into Nick's projections for the opening night roster and how the lines are going to look.
Yeah.
So, Nick, take it away.
Yeah, for sure. So, let's start with the forward group. And please, before I go into all of this.
Now, would you like my commentary between lines?
Yeah, you can.
Okay.
For sure. I do the same thing for your rankings.
Yes, fair enough.
Please text us at 615-737-1025. I would love to see your reaction to what I have compiled as we go along here. So please feel free to text us. I want your reactions to the Predators opening night lineup. So my precursor to the lineup is I do think we will have 23 players listed on the roster that night. So that's the most that you can carry, all right? That is the most. Not every team will use all 23 spots. I think the Predators will. If it's by one, I still consider that a win for my prediction, because by one, it's 22. It's just anyone else that you want. So on the first line, this is the no-brainer that has kind of come across us the last couple of days. Since he came back from his lower body injury, this line has formed. Philip Forsberg on the left wing with Ryan O'Reilly down the middle, and to the right of him is Juuso Parsonen. And Juuso Parsonen had a lower body injury during training camp, and now he's been on consecutive line rushes with them. They had about 5 or 6 rushes today at practice alone and stuck together in some other drills as well.
So you're saying Parsonen is no longer going to be playing center. He's going to be at wing now.
Yep.
I think I like that.
Yeah.
I think with his size, his ability, he has good puck skills from what I can attest.
Oh, yeah.
I think that that is the easiest player to transition from being a center to a wing.
And I think that they have multiple people that can play center and wing, and you'll see that throughout the lineup as well. So, and Parsonen will be a very valuable asset on the power play if he gets hot. So, good to see him on the first line. I think he can make that jump. So, on the second line, this may come as a shock to some people, and I want to just preview this by saying this is going to be the line that could throw teams off, I feel like. And also, Brunette is not a believer in 1-2-3-4 necessarily, having four lines. He's going to roll these lineups. So, my second line from left to right, Denis Garianov, the new acquisition at wing for the Predators, will be on the left wing on the second line. Down the middle, Young Buck, a gentleman that has prevailed through a lot of triumph. Cody Glass will be your second line center this season. And to the right of him is the seasoned veteran on the wing. He used to play for the Red Wings. Gustav Nyquist will play on the right wing. With Cody Glass down the middle, Denis Garianov to the left of him, that will be your quote-unquote second line this season.
Okay, so I like what I saw from Garianov in the preseason games that we've watched so far. The only problem that I have with your top two lines, now again, you would know this better than I would. You said Brunette doesn't believe in lines like sticking together. You think he's going to go in and out. Now, is he going to play, let's say, lines more often than not? Clearly, line one is your best line.
Yeah.
You're going to play that one more often than not, but with guys that are being left off of line two, are you saying that line two is going to get more playing time than a line three? Because for me, I think Philip Tomasino and Luke Evangelista, one of those two young guys, need to be in those top two lines. That's just a feeling for me.
I tend to agree, and here's why I have the veterans of Garianov and Nyquist with Glass high up, is because, like I said, it will throw teams off. I think Denis is more deceptive of a player than you think he would be.
Okay.
I think the offensive prowess that comes with this line, you have two veterans between a guy that played first line center the rest of the season after Ryan Johansson went down, who was more than capable of being a first line center if he has to fill in. I'm not saying he is a first line centerman, but he is able to step up. So he's like what you had with Colton Sissons years ago when they had injuries down the middle. But that is a good point to bring up, because you've already spoken on two of the guys that I'm going to next, and you left out one key member that thrived. So you may be able to guess what this third line is. From left to right, I have Philip Tomasino on the left. Down the middle, Tommy Novak. And to the right of him,
I'm a big Tommy Novak guy. You know that.
To the right of Tommy Novak, Luke Evangelista. Now, here's my case, and then I would like to hear your rebuttal to this. The reason it is not the second line is based on experience and chemistry. I feel like this is a group that will ease into more ice time as the season goes along. Brunette needs to see more from them.
I think it's the more talented line.
It has a
ton of upside.
Yes, it
on
does.
This line.
And you can break it up at some point if you want to. You could put a Tomasino on the first line with Parsonen, or in place of Parsonen. This is going to be very interchangeable, I would say. And I like it because Novak has a purpose now. And if he does better than Glass at some point, well, you can give him some more ice time. But also, too, Novak is going to be a key component to the first power play unit, I would say.
Yes, and I agree, because he's very good on the power play. And I think he even got a power play goal in the preseason. Was that
against, he scored twice.
Was that against Florida or Tampa? I can't remember
Tampa.
Which one.
It was against Tampa.
So my another kind of concern that I have with this line three is the size.
Okay.
I feel like there's not a lot of size on this line.
No.
You know, because I feel like Garianov is kind of the size on line two, and then you got Parsonen on line one. Those are kind of your more bigger, stout guys.
Yeah, I think Ryan O'Reilly and Forsberg get physical whenever they need to as well. And then I think the fourth line is where you'll see the most physicality as well. So we will do this before the break, and we can come back and finish this if we want to. But I would say my fourth line, Trinan on the left, Colton Sissons down the middle, and the beloved Cole Smith on the right wing. Cole Smith, I feel like, is a hated player, and yes, I say hated because a lot of fans do not like him. But I think he has the value behind what Brunette would like to see when you run four lines. Stanley Cup caliber teams, they are not, but Stanley Cup caliber teams are able to roll lines and have effective hitting pieces on every single line. If you don't have that, you're going to have a very difficult time to win a lot of hockey games.
Okay, so your forwards that were close to making it that didn't make the cut.
I would say,
a guy that comes to mind for me,
yep,
and I feel like he was kind of a energizer bunny, a spark plug, a very more of like an effort guy.
You're probably talking about Kiefer Sherwood.
I am definitely talking about Kiefer Sherwood.
Kiefer Sherwood, I feel like, is the missing piece out of the lineup maybe the first night. I think if he gets in the opening night lineup, it's in place of Cole Smith. But I think that Kiefer Sherwood and Sam Fagamo are going to be the odd men out on opening night.
So if I were to really make any changes,
okay,
I want, and this is just based off of you shoving my face in front of the TV screen to watch Milwaukee Admirals hockey. I like Kiefer Sherwood a lot. I am also a Kiefer Sherwood guy. I would love to see him and Luke Evangelista on the same line.
Yeah.
I think that would he kind of brings the physicality, whereas Evangelista brings the skill and the finesse.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those two work well together.
Oh,
and
yeah,
if you were to put them with a guy like Tommy Novak, I think that would be a really good line. I feel like line two just doesn't have enough juice.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I would put, like, you know, if Sherwood would be on the line with Novak and Evangelista, I would put Tomasino on line two. With maybe a Gurianov and a Glass, and then put Nyquist down on the fourth line, that would be me. But other than that, I kind of like this, and I'm getting what you're saying because you're talking about chemistry and experience and who's going to work and play well together, and I think that yours makes more sense. I'm just kind of playing NHL in my mind, saying,
yes,
well, I kind of like that. But
yeah,
either way, I like your lines,
yeah,
and I think that they all make
for
sense.
For sure. And I think we already know who the goalies are, so we'll do the defensemen next segment for sure. I can go over those pretty quickly. We know that UC Saros and Kevin Lankinen will be your starting goaltenders this season, but I think the more interesting part to this lineup, Junie, is the defense core based on the whole entire core that they have.
I like the tease, Nick Kieser. Coming up next, we're going to wrap up the opening night lines and rosters with the defenseman pairings. We're going to put a bow on things on this special Tuesday edition of Riddle and the Reporter. Junior Riddle, Nick Kieser here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. Join Robbie Stanley, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Twin Peaks in Madison this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 for our NFL pregame show. They'll break down the Titans' Week 5 matchup against the Colts and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and The Beast Unleashed. Last segment here on this Tuesday edition of Riddle and the Reporter. We went through the forward lines. Everybody in the city knows who's going to be the starting and backup goalie. So now, Nick Kieser, take it away, and let's wrap up this opening night lines with the defensive pairings.
Yeah, for sure. So we know that the captain, Roman Josi, who, by the way, I brought up to him, I asked him a question related to, you know, hey, you're coming into the season as the longest tenured captain in franchise history, and the first thing he said was, oh, I had no idea. So the longest tenured captain had no idea that he was, but he's been a beloved leader and a player here, and I'm excited to see what he does this year because he had a down year last year. He got hurt, but on the first pairing, this will come as a shock to a lot of people, and I think this will be interchangeable, but I think that we'll see the bulk of the beginning of the season, at least the first 15 games or so, maybe less if it goes horribly wrong, but the entire camp, we have seen him play the majority of it with Luke Shen.
Oh, well, that's not a shock to me.
So
I thought you were going to say, like, Jake Livingstone or something. I was going to, like,
well,
fall out of my
seat. Well, he didn't make the team. So we are going off of who is here in Nashville today that I saw on the ice.
I know, I just threw out a random name.
Yes. So, anywho, Luke Shen will be your top right-handed defenseman next to Roman Josi. Luke Shen has a lot of experience playing with some high-caliber defensemen. He's played with the likes of Quinn Hughes. He's played with Morgan Riley. And quite frankly, he could fit in nicely. He's brought in as this quote-unquote enforcer, protector for the defensive, you know, players, and also for Roman Josi in specific, but also for the young guys in general. So we'll see how that goes over. But on the second pairing, you have an acquisition that comes via trade with Matthias Ekholm going the other way. You have Tyson Barrie playing on the left with another familiar face that played in Nashville all season long after he was dealt from the Tampa Bay Lightning, Ryan McDonagh. So that pairing has a lot of winning on it because Barrie was coming from the Edmonton Oilers, who were always on the cusp of the conversation of they're going to be Stanley Cup contenders. He played on the elite power play, the historic power play unit last year. And so Barrie brings in those insights to the Predators as well. He wants to share the tricks of the trade to have a better power play. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with Barrie this year with McDonagh. I think that that line complements each other solely based on the fact that Barrie drives the puck up the ice. McDonagh does too. He's quick with that. He does very long reads from time to time, and he's a bruiser. I like him. He blocks shots. Barrie is going to be kind of like your finesse guy that gets you out as quick as possible. So that's the lineup there.
I like this because you kind of have more of an offensive-centric defenseman, and then you have your kind of bruiser defenseman that likes to get into the nitty-gritty here.
Yes.
The one thing that I have a question, because, and again, I thought this was going to be the top two pairings on defense. Last year we saw a lot of Josi and McDonagh together. Yes. Do you think Brunette is going to like to kind of space out the talent? Or do you think that, you know, eventually maybe if Shen doesn't work out with Josi on that top pairing, that he will move McDonagh back and then maybe have Shen go with Barrie and then kind of have that, you know, really there's your top defensive pairing and then there's, you know, your clear second defensive pairing?
I would agree. And solely based on that, we've seen McDonagh with Josi and we've also seen it at training camp, and I saw it today a few times as well. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's what it's going to be on the opening night or what it's going to be the first game at home for the Predators, which is next Thursday. I think it's interchangeable, but I think for the time being, the vision that Trotz has in conjunction with Brunette, I think this is what they want to do, which leads me to the final defensive pairing that draws a lot of drama.
I'm so excited. Because this one is the one I've been asking everybody. I've been asking you, Max, Willie. I'm like, who's going to be the final two pairing on defense? Because this is a huge decision.
It is. And here's why it's a big decision that has come up for the Predators. It's because all of the defensemen, and there will be three defensemen that I feel like could be very interchangeable. And one in particular, if he does not have a good season or if the Predators see a fit to go ahead and move off of him, it's very easy to trade him and call up somebody. So on the left, on the last defensive pairing, someone that's familiar to the Nashville Predators came in, made his NHL debut in the playoffs against the Dallas Stars, is Dante Fabbro. Dante Fabbro makes the cut. I think he's more of a lock than maybe people think that he is.
They just paid him.
Yeah, they just paid him. But it's a very friendly deal for the Predators. Here's why. They're bringing him in on a one-year deal. The only player—
Is it two or two and a half?
So he's getting paid two and a half.
That's what I
thought. So is Carrier. And so Carrier is the partner that I have in mind for him right now. So you've got Fabbro and Carrier. Which leaves me to my extras, and we already alluded to who the two forwards are that I would keep in the lineup, which would be Sherwood and Fagamo. The one defenseman I would keep in Nashville without putting him on waivers is Jeremy Lazan. So you have three extras in Lazan, Sherwood, and Fagamo. Fagamo, you could put on the waivers again. I just feel like the Preds are the kind of organization where they wouldn't move a guy again like that, that just flew all the way out here looking for a new opportunity. I don't think they would do that unless they felt sure he was going to go to Milwaukee. But Milwaukee could use Fagamo because they have a lot of talent in Milwaukee, and he could add to that, scoring 23 goals last year in the American League. But I think Jeremy is the odd man out. I just wrote a story about him today, actually, at Nashville Hockey Now. But over at thegamenashville.com, I also alluded to a lot of this as well. So I'm all over the place. But I think that for Lauzon, the biggest challenge that faces him, he told me today that this is a very friendly system for him. So he could thrive. But I think that Fabbro, Carrier, and Lauzon, if one supersedes the other and takes a spot in the middle of the season, someone's going to get traded or somebody is not getting a contract next summer, because Fabbro will be an RFA, which is a great deal for the Preds. And then you've got a UFA unrestricted in Alex Carrier, who got another opportunity. And I feel like he's making the lineup because Trotz wants to see him. So that's how I would roll things out for the Nashville Predators going into the season. This could change in the first week or two, but this is what I've got, Junie.
All in all, I think it looks really good. With Fabbro and Carrier, I think that pairing is going to be odd to me.
Yeah.
And it's only because I feel like, although they're on the same team, I feel like they're kind of competing against each other.
They are.
And, you know, they both could have gotten let go. You know, I felt like the Preds were going to choose one this offseason.
I thought so,
and
too.
And they wound up bringing both of them back. So it's going to be really interesting to see who kind of plays out in that final three defensemen that you talked about. Lauzon in there as well. Mm-hmm. Because I think towards the tail end of last year, he was starting to play a little bit better.
Yeah, he was.
So it will be really interesting to see kind of who breaks out and who they keep and who they use as trade bait, especially knowing that they do have so much talent in Milwaukee. It'll be really interesting to see how they use it.
I think so.
Going forward.
I really think so. And I think for Lauzon, you know, he's on a $2 million deal, but he has 3 years left. So we'll see what the defensive core looks like. It's the biggest question mark going into the season, but also lots of talent to look forward to.
Absolutely. That is all the time that we have this evening on this special Tuesday edition of Riddle and the Reporter. We will not be on the air on Friday, as the Preds will be playing that night. But we will be back the following Friday giving you all the latest, bringing back Price to That Parlay and all that. But that is all the time we have. Have a great Tuesday night, and we will see you next week.